It's the Burt Cohen Show. Dream goes on. The dream of America has always been privacy rights. We have our privacy rights. The police have their jobs to do, to investigate and to look around and find out who's guilty of what and try to keep us all safe. But our privacy rights, as spelled out very specifically in the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, we've always taken as absolutely sacred. You know, there's always interests that are seeking to get around our privacy rights and snoop, spy into who we are as Americans, what we're up to. Nixon certainly did it, and Obama, quite frankly, has done a lot more of that. The work that has gone on in the past few years to spy on Americans, mega data collection has been really interesting, and it's brought together people on the left and right who are concerned about what's happening to our private rights. And I'm very pleased to have with us today on the Burt Cohen Show a fellow on privacy, surveillance, and security at the Center for Democracy and Technology, Jake LaPerouque. Jake, thanks for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, sure. And you know, recently, tech companies like Apple and Google have tried to make sure that the data customers carry on their smartphones and computers is more secure, safer from the prying eyes of government spies and identity thieves alike. But law enforcement officials, from the FBI to local police, see those same devices as treasure troves of evidence that they could be using to stop crimes and catch criminals. Thus, it seems that kind of a state of war over access to this private data may be building. For the last few years, since the news about the massive government spying came out, Apple and Google have tried to make the data customers carry on their smartphones and computers more secure and safer. Tell us about specifically about what those companies have done, if you would, Jake, to their newer phone devices to help protect us. Something I don't completely understand, default encryption that makes it very difficult, if not impossible, to unlock the devices for police. What have Apple and Google done, Jake?
Right. So what Apple and Google have done is deploy this default encryption on their phones. And that pretty much means that any unauthorized access onto the phone, the device itself and the data stored on that device, is now scrambled unless you're the authorized user and you can plug in a password. And this really is an issue that's directed at security and preventing cybercrime. So if a thief steals your phone and tries to grab all the sensitive data on it, if a hacker breaks their way into your phone and wants to see your password, your bank records, your emails, now all they're going to get is illegible code. So this really is a way of deploying to the entire general public, every smartphone user out there, something that's going to keep you more safe from cyber criminals.
And I have a feeling that, well, before we get to the question of what motivates Apple and Google, it's not out of the goodness of their hearts. Tell us first, if you would, about the place where you work, the Center for Democracy and Technology. What is that? How is that funded? And what are you guys trying to do there?
So the Center for Democracy and Technology, we're a nonprofit advocacy group based in Washington with a few other locations throughout the world and throughout the country. We work on a range of tech issues, everything from surveillance to free speech to net neutrality. My work, which focuses on government surveillance, goes on everything from, you know, NSA monitoring people on a global scale to protecting the privacy of an individual's phone in their pocket and making sure that really we have these technologies working with our overall message, which is that the internet and new technology should empower individuals and democratic societies.
And you're funded just by private donations. I assume the government isn't supporting your work?
It's a mix of foundations, donations, things like that. No, but we are an independent nonprofit, so we're not funded by the government at all.
Well, sounds good. Glad you're there. Now, as I was starting to ask before, surely it's not simply out of the goodness of their freedom-loving hearts. Why are businesses like Apple and Google doing this? And there are, you know, we're going to talk about the new effort by the FBI to make these changes. Why did they decide to build in new privacy protections against government snooping? What's in it for them? How would enabling less protection affect their bottom line, their businesses in the U.S. and worldwide? And are they concerned about having this potential new requirement for government access? What are they there to protect? Again, it's not out of the goodness of their freedom-loving hearts, I assume.
Right. I mean, I think these companies do sometimes try to push measures that advance tech forward, you know, just for the good of society. But in the end, right now, we're seeing a reality where privacy is becoming good business for these tech companies, and they want to be seen more as more privacy-friendly. Since the Snowden revelations about NSA surveillance last year, these tech companies, which are a really big part of the American economy, have taken a huge hit, especially internationally, because people are now afraid to use these services, afraid that the government may be snooping on them. So in general, these companies acting in ways that are more friendly to privacy and actually taking actions that show, you know, we're not just going to talk about this, we're going to do things that try to protect your privacy and prioritize it, they realize that that's a priority for them as a business. Now, in terms of this measure specifically, while it may have some issues for government, I mean, I think this really is a consumer safety issue and a personal security issue. I mean, the primary impact of this default encryption is it's going to make the average American's phone more safe from hackers. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something that's good for companies, too. I mean, if my products that if I have a safer product, I'm going to be more inclined to buy it, to use it, to put my data on it. A secure product is just something that a customer is much more likely to buy than an insecure product. They realize that, so the companies are moving forward to make these products safer and make them more appealing to users.
Well, that makes a lot of business sense. And a friend of mine, a lawyer, urged me quite a while ago to think of the computer on my desk as a spy on my desk, you know, right there. And just to, I haven't, you know, somehow as an American who, you know, believes in traditional American values of privacy, you know, I have wanted to buy into that. I've wanted to believe that my communications are safe from government spying. I'm probably terribly naive on this, but, you know, not like I'm in any danger or anything. There's a lot of issues here about privacy and freedom. Now, what's news about this is that FBI Director James Comey is coming up with, he's gone before Congress asking them to make some changes. What is he asking Congress to do?
Right. So FBI Director Comey and a number of other law enforcement officials have responded to this in a bit of an alarmed manner. Yeah. They're saying that this is going to potentially stop law enforcement. FBI Director Comey, during a speech a week ago, actually not only called for Congress to potentially create some sort of legislation that would allow that would require companies to build backdoors into these devices for government to use. And when I say backdoors, I essentially mean some way to hack through, to break through the encryption and get in an unauthorized manner. But he also called on, not even just on devices, but on online communications, communications in the cloud, to have a similar sort of backdoor. And those are both very disturbing ideas because, you know, a backdoor is not something that can only be used by the government. You can't control who goes through a backdoor. If you open it up for government, that means you're going to be opening it up for hackers, for cyber criminals, for bad actors who we should all be very concerned with getting into our devices.
Yeah, I'd say. If you just tuned in to the Burt Cohen Show, our guest today is Jake LaPerouque, a fellow on privacy, surveillance, and security at the Center for Democracy and Technology. So, tell us about how your group what's your involvement with regard to this Comey thing? So he's gone to Congress. He's asking him to force, I guess, the Google and Apple and companies like that to enable, somehow enable government to have, as you say, a backdoor. So what's the Center for Democracy and Technology doing about it?
Well, right now we're trying to get the word out on why this would be a bad idea, trying to make sure that the public is aware of the importance of the issue, make sure that members of Congress and their staff and other policymakers understand that that what Apple has done in terms of decryption, what Google has done by encrypting phones, that this is actually very good for the average American, that it's not going to harm law enforcement, and that it's actually going to reduce crime. I mean, if the FBI wants to protect citizens from criminals, it should want every smartphone user to have their data encrypted.
Well, but then again, shouldn't they? Well, that's an interesting point. You're suggesting that if they really wanted to work on law enforcement, they should urge everybody to have their data encrypted. It sounds like what they're asking for is just the opposite.
Exactly. They're asking, I mean, when they're saying that they want a backdoor, they're saying they want this encryption to have a hole in it, have some way to break through. And, you know, I don't think that anyone really could ever possibly design something that the government can break through but a hacker won't. It's kind of like the FBI saying, oh, we should we want all gun makers to make guns that can only shoot bad guys. It's just you can't control who can use these back doors, and we should expect, I think, given how much cybercrime is rampant right now, that these back doors will be found and misused by hackers if we put them into phones.
And by cybercrime, I take it you mean, you know, people hacking in and stealing people's identities, things like that?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about I have to confess, my favorite fictional TV show now, Homeland. It seems like these fictional CIA people can relatively easily hack into bad guys' phones and communication systems. I wonder how far from reality that is. I don't know if you've been able to watch any of Homeland, Jake.
No, it's I'm more of a HBO person than Showtime, I have to admit. But you know, I think that does kind of raise the idea of, though, when this is going to be used by, you know, the bad guys, the bad actors, encryption specifically. You know, what does that mean for this? And I think that sort of points to the idea that, you know, I'm sure that on the show, bad actors using encryption didn't come about because Apple started encrypting their devices. You know, this announcement wasn't sort of the first time that consumers have had encryption available. Apple didn't say, hey, we invented encryption for your phones. That's been an option for a while, and that's been something that a criminal could potentially take advantage of. What they've done is roll out encryption to the average consumer, the average iPhone, the average Android user, to make them more safe and secure from hackers. So when the government has talked about, oh, this is going to be disastrous for us, we now can't get into phones. I mean, keep in mind, the threat of encryption being used against them has, and used by criminals, has existed for a very long time.
It's, right.
There's nothing new in that respect. There's nothing new from a threat. And the government has the same ability to respond that they always have in the past to those threats.
And it seems to me that, you know, before there were these wireless little gadgets, there has always been telephones. And bad guys have been able to use telephones in the past. And it's always been required, as far as I know, to have a court order before you can wiretap. I mean, Nixon and those guys used actual wiretaps, and police are specifically not allowed to tap into traditional phone lines without a court order. So it seems, am I right that it's just, we're talking about consistency with tradition, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is really, I think, a pretty well-established precedent in terms of when the government's allowed to access this. I mean, just to sort of give a short version of sort of the development of that law, early in the 20th century when phones were starting to be used by consumers, the Supreme Court originally said, oh, well, you don't really have an expectation of privacy here. You don't have a Fourth Amendment right because it's going over these wires. Other people are listening. Later in the late 60s, the Supreme Court looked back again and said, no, actually, that doesn't make sense. When you're on a phone, it really is a private conversation, even if it's going over these wires and cables. So they changed that. Congress passed a law, the Wiretap Act, setting out the parameters for it. And that's really been the standard ever since, is that, you know, so tapping into a phone line is the same as tapping into or searching someone's house.
Uh-huh.
So in 1994, the government passed this law, CALEA, which is kind of what the government is asking for now, slightly different, but the general concept of, we want companies to build their structures in a way that allows us to get into the these devices if we have a proper court order, and that's the standard for phone lines. What's really different, though, with these devices is that when you build a, if you're building a backdoor through encryption on a phone, that's leaving it vulnerable to a lot more people. If the government the government's process is to go to a phone company and say, let us listen in on this phone call, we have a warrant. Obviously, if a criminal asked to do that, the phone company would say, no, I don't think so. Your device, there's no intermediary there. It's just you and the person trying to get into it.
So the CALEA, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act of 1994, was it about protecting privacy, or did it also require phone companies to make it possible for federal officials to wiretap their users' phone calls?
Exactly. The main impact of CALEA was saying phone companies, when they create their networks, they have to do it in a way that if a court has a warrant, they can go and look at, and they can go and listen in on those calls. That you can kind of shrug off a warrant by saying, oh, we're not able to do that. And part of what Director Comey is calling for is to extend that to internet communications, things like email, which seems a bit of a stretch, because right now, an email company, a Google, a Yahoo, AOL, whoever, that controls email, they get those warrants just like phone companies, and they comply with them. You know, if a company gets a proper warrant from the government that's specific, that's from a judge that says you need to turn over these emails, they'll do it. So in terms of extending CALEA towards those communications seems to be risking our security now for an imaginary problem.
Well, seeing how this is 20 years old, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act of 1994, you know, it's changed. Technology has changed radically. And so these new modern devices aren't included under the law, I guess. But so doesn't it need updating? I mean, it's difficult, if not impossible, for police to get a suspect's records, perhaps even with the warrant. So isn't there a fairly strong argument for the FBI and the police to update this law, CALEA of 1994?
Well, I actually think, you know, we do need some updates to tech law and surveillance law, but I actually think the other way, we need to update them to protect our privacy. I mean, one thing my organization works on is updates to the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, which controls how the government can get emails. That law actually hasn't been updated for an even longer period since 1986. And that law has a bit of a loophole from when it was created, because email was so different, saying if an email is over 180 days old, the government doesn't need a warrant for it. I think if we're going to be updating tech law, we should definitely be starting there. But in terms of CALEA, you know, it's good to make sure that we're keeping up with technologies in our law, but I don't see an intense need for law enforcement to be changing these laws and to be carving out back doors. As I said, they currently have the ability to get email, electronic communications, works perfectly well. There's no real problems with the way those systems are built. And in terms of devices, there are a lot of reasons why it's really not that much of a problem that these devices are encrypted. The government has other means to get data. They potentially have the ability to compel decryption of data. And when asked, they've so far been able to not to produce a single case when they could say this device being encrypted stopped us from solving a case or averting a crime.
Interesting. Yeah, and we'll have to eventually get to discuss the whole so-called Patriot Act, which, we'll get to that. Has it helped protect us from foreign attacks? We'll get to that for sure. If you just tuned into the Burt Cohen Show, our guest today is Jake LaPerouque of the Center for Democracy and Technology. We're talking about new efforts by the FBI Director James Comey to open up a backdoor to your private communications. Now, I'm not familiar with James Comey. How long has he been in? Is he an Obama appointee?
He is an Obama appointee. I don't remember the exact time of his confirmation. I think it's fairly recent, though, around the last year or so.
Well, the FBI has a long checkered history of directors of the FBI, but he's no J. Edgar Hoover, I hope, who is a little bit nuts. But, you know, there is that danger there of somebody heading up the FBI, the National Police Force, intruding too much on our privacy. Now, you know, there's the executive. I guess Comey is part of the executive branch of government. And then there's the legislative branch. And FBI Director Comey is now going before the legislative branch, Congress, to call for these changes, calling for them to enact this. And it does seem, historically, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been at this for a while, I'm sure, that law enforcement traditionally goes before Congress. If they say jump, Congress asks how high. You know, they just do what law enforcement wants. It seems like, you know, they feel like they can't possibly go against law enforcement. For example, any request for new legal authority for the type of military-grade material recently on display in Ferguson, Missouri, you know, where, you know, now the police have tremendous military material. They've certainly been militarized, and I think they had to go through Congress to be able to have that. Any sense of how often law enforcement agencies don't get exactly what they want from Congress?
Well, I think it depends on the issue, but definitely since the disclosures about overbroad NSA surveillance starting last year, Congress has been a lot more skeptical of those government requests than they have in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an issue that you'll see that again on already a couple members of Congress, specifically Darrell Issa, who's a kind of very loud and out Republican member, and Zoe Lofgren, who's a very liberal member, have both said, you know, there's zero chance that this type of proposal would get through Congress. It's not happening. It's dead on arrival. So I think that shows really, you know, with that kind of odd pairing, how strong and how broad the opposition to this type of item could be. I mean, Congress understands that the public is concerned about government surveillance. They don't want more of it. They're concerned about cybersecurity. They don't want the government forcing our phones to be less protected from hackers, and that businesses are taking a hit over this, that they're trying to respond to customer demands for more privacy, and they don't want to undermine business interests by destroying the security of these devices.
Yeah, that's true. Apple and Google, I mean, if nothing else, they run a heck of a good business, very profitable, powerful companies here. And, you know, Congress may traditionally not want to buck up against law enforcement, but they sure don't want to go up against companies that are employing lots and lots of people, especially these days when, you know, the economy is in tough shape. It sounds like what you're saying, Jake, just kind of makes an assumption that the work of Edward Snowden, his revelations about government surveillance, Edward Snowden has absolutely made a real difference in terms of shoring up our traditional protections. So any sense of that, you know, the work of Ed Snowden may have had an effect on Congress and their reluctance to further peel back any privacy protections? How much do we owe to Edward Snowden for making this change and shoring up traditional privacy?
Yeah, I think the revelations have undeniably had a huge impact on Congress and public opinion regarding these issues. You know, there traditionally in the last decade has been a mentality of kind of, you know, we have to pay the price to be secure, that if the government says we need something, we have to take them at their word, and that privacy kind of has to play second fiddle to security concerns. That's definitely not the case anymore, because we've seen some of these NSA programs that the government said were necessary turned out to not provide any value. We've seen that a lot of the surveillance that has happened is very disturbing to Americans on a fundamental level and very invasive to average Americans who have no connection to crime or terrorism. And so I think that's now taking an impact in Congress, that they're going to be more skeptical of these government requests. They're going to be more wary of surveillance that could potentially hurt average Americans. And they're going to be conscious of, well, what's going to be the ripple effects of this? Is this going to harm one of our most important industries?
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times people, especially on the left, say, oh, my voice doesn't make any difference. They're not listening to me. They're just listening to the Koch brothers and all their campaign contributors. And here's a case where it's pretty definitive that, yes, Congress, Republicans and Democrats, from Zoe Lofgren to Daryl Eisen. Now, you talk about, you know, quite a spread left and right. Daryl Eisen, wow, he is out there on the right. And for him to be agreeing with that, the public input, you know, absolutely makes a difference. And here is rock solid proof of that. And a lot of this goes back to the so-called Patriot Act. I mean, I have to call it so-called because to me it's very unpatriotic. And it was there in the Bush-Cheney administration, maybe I should say the Cheney-Bush administration, well before September 11th, 2001. And they just kind of plugged it in directly after that. Draw your own conclusions about that. But James Sensenbrenner, a senator from Wisconsin, was a key sponsor of the so-called Patriot Act. And nowadays, he's a Republican. He's openly troubled by its overreach. Mike, I believe he recognizes that, you know what, the provisions in the Patriot Act haven't made us any safer at all. They haven't had any impact whatsoever on protecting us from potential terrorist attack. So he's troubled by its overreach, and he's made some interesting arguments against what law enforcement is now pushing, that since government is not reliably there to protect our privacy rights, as it perhaps should be. I mean, he says the, quote, businesses have taken matters into their own hands to protect their customers and their bottom lines. I find this fascinating. I mean, let's talk a bit about what the Fourth Amendment is. I mean, everybody knows the Second Amendment. What is the Fourth Amendment, and how much of a twist is this in the long history of knowing government has been there to ensure privacy rights?
Right. So, I mean, the kind of most basic concept of the Fourth Amendment is no unreasonable searches and seizures. And that generally means if you have a search, you need a warrant. There are obviously some exceptions to that, but that's a pretty general principle. Now, though, kind of with technology, we're starting to see, well, what happens if we don't necessarily have someone listening in our communications or tossing our house, but doing something that's pretty invasive? That's something the courts had to deal with in their recent the Jones opinion, which dealt with location tracking. And that's what we're dealing with in the most controversial aspect of what the government's done under the Patriot Act, which is this bulk collection of our phone data. Now, that doesn't involve listening to conversations, but it does involve scooping up and keeping the records of every American's phone calls, who they're calling, when, and for how long. And that's been very, very troubling to a lot of people. And it has raised some legal challenges of, well, doesn't this violate the Fourth Amendment that are still ongoing? But meanwhile, a number of members of Congress, one of the key ones is Representative Sensenbrenner, who, as you said, wrote the Patriot Act, but feels that it's been kind of twisted and misused in this respect, are pushing a law, the USA Freedom Act, that would change this provision of the Patriot Act and say, no, you can potentially do a targeted search. You can, if you have proper suspicion, ask for one person's records, but you can't just say, I want everyone in America in one court order. Yeah. That's not what the law was designed to do.
And I got to ask, and people who defended the so-called Patriot Act say, well, it's there to protect us from the bad guys. They say, well, what else is it there for? And I haven't been able to come up with a reason. If it's not there, if the so-called Patriot Act is not there to protect us and to, you know, catch, you know, terrorists before they do anything bad, what is the real purpose of that? You guys at the Center for Democracy and Technology must have some thoughts as to what their motivation is for this mega data collection.
Well, I mean, I think I do generally trust that the intentions of the government has in bulk collection has been to try to counterterrorism, but I think there's two important points you have to keep in mind with that. First is that just because the government's acting properly now doesn't mean it's always going to. You know, well, what if we do have another J. Edgar Hoover running the FBI or the NSA, and they just have this giant pile of everyone's phone records? How could they potentially use that? I mean, what would J. Edgar Hoover have done if he had that much information? And I think the second item to keep in mind is that even if bulk collection was genuinely done out of an attempt to stop terrorist threats, it simply has not succeeded in that goal. There have been multiple independent reports from the president's own review group on NSA surveillance, from the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board, from members of Congress that have said this program, this bulk collection, has never found a terrorist threat, has never discovered a terrorist threat, has never stopped a terrorist plot. It simply hasn't paid off in that respect.
So why would Cheney and those guys have been so you know, hot and bothered to get something like this in there? What is their motivation if it isn't working? Or am I assigning bad intentions where it may not be there?
Well, it's impossible to know. I think, you know, initially there was and probably still is going to kind of some of the leaks that have come out about the NSA having this collect-it-all mentality that, you know, just they want the whole haystack so they can make sure they find the needle in it.
Right.
And we steadily kind of learned, unfortunately, through trial and error, that that's simply not an effective way to go about things, that you can get what you're looking for through targeted surveillance that doesn't have this mass collateral damage to Americans' privacy.
And I've had friends who actually lost friends in the Twin Towers on September 11th, and they have been some of the strongest advocates for this, saying we got to protect ourselves from further attacks. Do the police, does the FBI and the various CIA and others, do they have enough tools now to do the job without this invasion of our privacy?
Absolutely, and that's something that they've said. So the USA Freedom Act, the main legislative fix to this bulk collection problem that's being sponsored by Representative Sensenbrenner in the House and Senator Patrick Leahy in the Senate, that bill would not end the Patriot Act, but it would say you have to have targeted collection. You have to name a specific source that you're going after when you're collecting data or records. And the Attorney General and James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, who has long been a supporter of what the NSA has been doing, sent a letter to Senator Leahy saying, we support this bill. We think it's a good bill and should pass. And this change to the Patriot Act, this end to bulk collection, is not going to inhibit our ability to do our job, and it's going to allow us to preserve essential operations. So you have it really from the horse's mouth saying, this type of reform that's going to protect Americans' privacy is fine. We can be safe and we can increase our privacy.
Well, I certainly hope so. It'd be nice to be able to have our security cake and our privacy cake at the same time. And I believe it was Ben Franklin, maybe it was somebody else who said those who are willing, or no, Thomas Jefferson, those who are willing to sacrifice their freedom for a little more security deserve neither. And we got to protect our freedom. And Senator Ron Wyden, who has been to New Hampshire a few times, I think he'd kind of like to be in the White House at some point, among many other people. He's been one of the most vocal advocates of privacy protection. So I assume he's on board with this. What's the name of the act? And this is one that Leahy and Sensenbrenner are co-sponsoring?
Right. It's the USA Freedom Act. It's kind of gone through a very long history of development, but reached a pretty good consensus where, again, this is a case where you have some strange bedfellows. You've got strong support on both sides in the House. You have, again, the two authors are Republican and Democrat. In the Senate, two of the co-sponsors are Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz. So, you know,
oh, my.
It's a unique honor for the bill. You have all the tech companies behind it, civil liberties groups, and the Director of National Intelligence. So it's definitely developed into a very strong and broad consensus in terms of its support. And yeah, I would like to see this be the sort of thing that's being discussed more on the campaign trail. I mean, I know there's obviously a very close Senate race in New Hampshire. I'd like to hear what those candidates would do on NSA reform and if they would support this bill if they go back to Washington. You know, I'd like to hear Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, who's looking like he might be the new majority leader. What's he going to do about the NSA if he's running the Senate next year? Is that going to be a top item on his agenda, and would he support this bill?
Yeah, it's been interesting to me how senators and reps on both sides of the aisle, yes, there's this amazing strange bedfellows, Cruz and Sanders, my goodness, you can't get any more to the left and to the right. But they recognize people care about privacy. But the issue hasn't come up. I've been surprised at that. I mean, I will say that our own member of Congress from this part of New Hampshire, Carol Shea Porter, has been very clear on this, and she's raised the issue. But it doesn't seem to have political legs. It's like the pollsters in their research seem to be pretty much in agreement that this is not an issue that brings out voters. What do you make of that? I mean, I care a lot about privacy. The civil liberties groups certainly do. But why is it that there's not more talk about issues like this?
Right. Well, I think there could be a few reasons. I think probably the most basic is that even though there has been a big shift in public opinion, and I think the consensus is clear that Americans want to find ways to rein in surveillance, especially ways like ending bulk collection that seem pretty clearly fine in terms of security, that aren't going to infringe on our safety, but are going to substantially aid privacy. But I think a lot of campaigns and candidates might just kind of still be in that mindset of, oh, I can't do anything that might be bad on security because that'll make me look bad.
Right.
Kind of conversely, I think another reason might be just that it's, on a campaign, you want to clash on issues, and this might be one where there's support on both sides, so it's not really going to matter. I mean, for example, one race, Senator Udall, who's been another one of the big champions of privacy and reigning surveillance, put out an ad on this, and I believe his opponent's response was, oh, well, we've supported NSA reform, too, and that's the case in a number of races. Is it's not a big campaign issue because both candidates say that they're on board with reigning in the NSA.
Interesting, and it seems like on this issue, it's very, very unique that perhaps the politicians are ahead of a lot of the public. It's normally the other way around, for sure. If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. We're talking with Jake LaPerouque of the Center for Democracy and Technology about FBI Director James Comey, who wants to break down the barrier to government having some access to your data. Now, Comey, FBI Director Comey, warned recently that encryption technologies, which is what we're talking about, are allowing criminals to become what he calls beyond the law. So he's saying that even with a court order, police are unable to access information that is critical to solving crimes. Speaking before the Brookings Institution recently, Comey said, quote, "The FBI has a sworn duty to keep every American safe from crime and terrorism, and technology has become the tool of choice for some very dangerous people," unquote. Is there a good response to this argument for breaking the encryption barriers?
Well, I think there are a few responses to that argument, which, first of all, I think most importantly, if the FBI wants to reduce crime, they should be applauding this decision because it's going to make it a lot harder for hackers or people who steal phones to break into those devices. And that's going to be really good to preventing cybercrime, to preventing identity theft. So
that's a good point.
This move is actually, I think, very important for the average American and consumer in stopping bad actions and crime against them. Now, in terms of this fear that the FBI is going to go dark, that government won't have access to phones, there's a few responses. First of all, there are a lot of other ways to get this type of data. You can, instead of going directly to the device, you can look towards data that's stored in the cloud, meaning stored on an external server. So if I email someone, that email will be on my device, but it'll also be on a Google or a Yahoo server because they route the email. And you can just go through other investigative methods. And that's why the government has been able to produce a single case when decryption has been critical. I mean, during that Brookings event you mentioned, a reporter asked Director Comey if there was a single instance when the ability to access the information on a phone was critical to rescuing an individual, and his direct quote on that is, "I don't think I know yet. I haven't found one yet." They don't have a single instance when they've needed this, but they're saying, it's going to be such a big problem that we need to make all of our devices less safe for it.
But, I mean, a lot of people are concerned that the laws about police powers were generally made many, many decades ago. And What about the argument that it's important that the law be amended to keep pace with technology so that, or can they break into the cloud very easily? And that's something that is concerning as well. I mean, the cloud, there's this huge amount of data just floating around there in the cloud. Do they have access to that? Or are police able to use, you know, keep pace with technology in getting crucial information to catch the bad guys?
Right. Well, one of the NSA revelations we've seen is that they have made some successful efforts to do that, to break into data centers and just scoop up the data without authorization. Law enforcement, that's probably beyond their reach. But typically, they have a much better response than that, which is simply go to a court, get a warrant, bring that warrant to the company and say, we have a warrant, we followed the proper steps, we're abiding by the Fourth Amendment, and now we get to look at this email. And that still works for them, and that's why it seems very strange that Director Comey not only directed his comments at encrypted devices, but also saying we need to create some sort of new law for the cloud, because there doesn't really seem to be a problem there.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure out what Comey's about. He urged Congress to update the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act of 1994 so that, in his words, we can, quote, create a level playing field, unquote, so that companies like Google and Apple have to provide police with the same access to information that telephone providers like AT&T do. What's wrong with this argument?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with the argument that police should be able to, with a proper warrant, search an email just like a phone. But I think the problem with the argument is that they don't have any issues doing that right now. They're just as readily able to. Really, what's happened here is that we're talking about the device, the item that's just in the hands of the user that has information that you want just for yourself on it, whether it be photos, bank records, passwords, credit card numbers. We want to keep that safe from hackers, and that's what Apple and Google are providing. So it seems that this really is just a hook to push a policy that has been pushed in the past.
Yeah, and there's been a long history of government snooping, of certain people liking that, not the least of which is President Obama. Where has the Obama administration been on this issue? Have they taken a public position on it, or are they just sort of in the background and letting Comey be the one out front?
Now, so far, it does seem to be just the FBI who has taken a stance in favor of these back doors into phones, and I think that definitely says something about, you know, that the support for this idea is pretty tepid. I mean, there haven't been any other agencies, and the administration itself hasn't said anything in support of this idea.
Interesting. Now, according to an article about this issue in The Hill, the FBI, and I think this is interesting, the FBI is unlikely to drop the pressure. Even though it's so clearly unpopular and so unpopular that even Congress is reluctant to go along with the FBI, and that takes some doing. So the FBI is unlikely to drop the pressure, especially if the tech companies keep putting a focus on their privacy protection. So according to this article, the more the tech companies, Apple and Google, et cetera, put the focus on their effective privacy protections, they're suggesting that the FBI is going to keep up the pressure. Say what?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to predict exactly what, you know, the FBI will do in the long term and what their mentality is going to be. But, I think this is definitely an issue where the companies see this as a priority. They see it as something the customers care about, and it's something that the public is very invested in. According to a recent poll, actually, as many as 68% of Americans think that this default encryption of phones is a great idea, even if it would make things a little harder for law enforcement. And granted, I mean, that was the question in the poll, was if it makes things a little harder for law enforcement. I actually think it's not going to have much of an impact on them at all. But they see this as a reasonable trade-off, even if that was the case. So I think that kind of shows that if the FBI wants to keep pushing this point, it's going to be a big uphill battle, and it's something that Congress, I think, would be very wary of, given where the public is, where the companies are, and given that the negative impact this would have on consumers to protect themselves.
Interesting. And as we've seen, there's been a tremendous increase in the politics of fear in October of 2014. Ebola, the big scare out there. And as somebody said, more people have married Kim Kardashian than have gotten Ebola. You know, members of Congress need to feel that there is public support already there before they take any position, which might be in the least bit controversial. And in June of 2014, the House voted 293 to 123 to adopt an amendment to a defense appropriations bill to cut off funds for the National Security Agency projects that build vulnerability into security products. But that was before the ISIS scare and the Ebola scare. And Comey of the FBI said recently, we need our private sector partners to take a step back, to pause, and to consider changing course. With this tremendous turning up the volume of fear, have the winds shifted since June? Has this fear mentality, you know, and the intense marketability of fear shifted the winds since that vote?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a factor in politics in general, but I think not so much in this case, because this really is an issue about cybercrime and user safety, not an issue about terrorism. As we talked briefly before, this action really didn't change the sort of the existence of encryption. You know, the top people in ISIS didn't look at the Apple announcement and go, oh, encryption, we never thought of that before, but we now have that on all our new iPhones. Encryption's existed for a while, and I would imagine that high-end criminals, terrorists, people like that have taken advantage of it in the past. What this really changed in terms of the status quo was meaning that the average consumer gets encryption on their phone, and that makes it a crime issue because it's going to prevent crime. It's going to stop hackers from breaking into those phones. So even though I think that, you know, these big scare issues like ISIS are going to play a role in our politics, I think this issue is going to be one that's going to be seen larger in terms of consumer safety.
Consumer safety. Now, consumer safety, as you say, from hackers, from identity theft, things like that. And so this rampant politics of fear these days, that you don't expect that to dampen Congress's willingness to put up a fight against new legislation to make these electronic products less secure. So you think, despite the politics of fear, you still are optimistic that Congress will not be affected by the politics of fear and thus enabling our phones to be less secure?
No, because, yeah, I don't think this has really changed the landscape for what a master criminal or a terrorist could do in terms of encryption. They've known about encryption before. They didn't realize it because Google and Apple made an announcement. What this has done is made it easier for an average American who has nothing to do with crime. So I think they will see a separation in this issue and see that this is something that the American people want to keep their data safe.
And again, people's voices are being heard. I wonder about the future on this. And let's say that Comey puts up the fight, gets the, frankly, bad publicity on this and loses. A lobbyist for the trade group of online businesses such as Apple and Google, Carl Szabo, said, quote, "I always think there is a chance, even if it's not as sweeping as installing a front door master key on every mobile device, it could be installing a small back door." Will, I can't imagine the FBI just giving up on this and just accepting that, you know, it's not going to happen. I mean, here it seems that there's this treasure trove of data out there. I mean, millions of people have these cell phones, and even I finally got an iPhone. I finally broke down and got one. And frankly, I like it. So, you know, there's this huge amount of data out there. These guys are in the business of collecting data. They want to collect data. Supposing they lose this battle, are they going to give up on the war altogether?
No, I would doubt it. And that goes back to what we discussed, the idea of this is really a new hook into an old proposal. This idea of building in more access for the government was talked about in 2012. The NSA surveillance revelations kind of put that on the bench in terms of consideration. It was considered in earlier in the early 2000s and the late 90s. And I'm sure when there's a new hook, it'll get brought up again. But I think it's just it's important to realize and to look at the fundamental questions of, well, has the situation changed in a way that makes this necessary? And I think here the answer is pretty clearly no. And would the harm of this outweigh any benefits? And the answer to that is, I think, definitely yes, because, as we you know said, kind of the most fundamental part of this debate is if you put a back door in a device, who can go through it? And the answer is anyone. You can't. It's not just the government with a warrant at the right time. It could be a bad actor. It could be a criminal. And the idea that the government, in the name of crime prevention and security, is going to open that back door for hackers seems pretty nonsensical.
Well, and it does appear to me that the government itself is not in the business of creating decryption devices. They don't have the expertise to do that. They're going to rely on private industry. And so here we have Apple and Google and, who knows, Samsung, whatever, who are building in the you know, encryption, the privacy technology in there. So I don't know. It seems like eventually maybe the government spies may just have to give up on this. I don't know. What do you suggest people do? I think, you know, taking anything for granted. I mean, it sounds like Congress is going to be there. It sounds like Apple and Google and the others have been, you know, protecting our Fourth Amendment privacy rights because it's good for their business. And that's a great thing here. What can and should people do? What I mean, which gets back to the work of the Center for Democracy and Technology.
Well, I think in terms of the legislative avenue, you know, calling your congressperson and talking to them about this issue does make a difference. You know, I've definitely gone into a lot of meetings with congressional staff and heard them say, you know, yeah, we've been getting a lot of calls about NSA surveillance. And, you know, the senator, the congressman, the congresswoman cares a lot about that, and that makes an impact on them. So I think calling your representative up and saying, you know, I want you to co-sponsor the USA Freedom Act. I want you to protect my phone from hackers by making sure that I can encrypt it. That is something that they will listen to if enough people call in and it becomes clear that this is an important issue to Americans.
Yeah. It's...
Then more on the simple side, I think it's important that people, you know, sort of take care of their digital hygiene. I mean, it's great that now your phone's encrypted by default, but look into basic security measures. See how you can better protect your password. Look into encrypting your phone and laptop. You know, those are the type of things that protect you on a day-to-day basis.
So are there products we as citizens, as consumers, can buy to protect ourselves even more?
Yeah, I mean, some are specific products. Our chief technologist just wrote a little about a sort of a USB plug that lets you authenticate your email without a password. So instead of plugging a password that a hacker could break, you plug in this device that only you have. That's an example of a device. There's also a lot of basic options in software and settings on your computer, things like, say, two-factor authentication, which you can turn on for your password for a lot of devices. That is a better way of ensuring that someone can't break through your password. And then just basic settings like making sure your passwords are not the type of thing that are easily hacked, right, and that you, say, don't put your password in a place that could be potentially accessed easily, not going on a public Wi-Fi network unless you're sure that you've taken precautions that someone couldn't hack into your computer.
You know, this sounds really nice. I mean, it sounds like this is a rare case of private enterprise, you know, things going for profits, protecting our right to privacy, working together to do some really good things for the common good. Hey, every now and then it happens. Well, thanks very much for being with us. Very informative. Jake LaPeruga, if people are interested in looking at the work that you guys do, the Center for Democracy and Technology, what kind of website should they go to?
I should go to cdt.org.
Easy enough, cdt.org. Thanks much, and we'll all do what we can to protect our privacy. Thanks again for being with us, Jake LaPeruga.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, and here are the Rolling Stones to talk about protecting your privacy. I'm
Yeah, you know, we ain't talking alone. Who's listening? But I don't really know.
But you better tell the SIS to keep out of sight, cause I know they're taking pictures on me ultraviolet light.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, but these days, it's all secrecy, no privacy.
Shoot for it.
That's right. Lay low.
Oh, yeah.